Hey, Three Song Story listeners, we love keeping this show free and easy to download for you. But to do that, we do have to remove the full versions of the songs from this version of the show. But if you want to hear the full versions of the songs in the interview, the way we did them in the studio, go right over to threesongstories.org or use WGCU's app and you can listen to the show exactly how we did it. Plus, you get to hear the song at the end of the show that each host chooses to tell you a little bit about themselves. All right, here's the show.
One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories. This is the podcast that connects you to our guests through the music that has touched their lives. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for listening. If this is your first episode, welcome. If you're already on board, welcome back to the musical memories train. My guest this episode is Cole Peacock. Cole's lived in Fort Myers since the early 80s. His family is fifth-generation Floridians. His better half is Rachel, and they have three children, Sterling, Hannah, and Jackson, two of which are all grown up, and Jackson's getting there fast. Over the years, Cole's worn lots of different hats. He's been a corporate executive and consultant. He's co-founder of Game Nation Theme Parks, and he spent many years in the world of politics, from running campaigns for other candidates to being one himself when he ran for State House a few years back. If I tried to list all the businesses and organizations Cole's been involved with, I'd be here all day. Like I said, lots of different hats. But beside all of that, he and his wife Rachel and their whole family are my old friends from way back, and it's such a treat to get him in the Three Song Stories chair today.
Hey there, Cole.
How are you? That's a great intro there.
Well, thank you. I try to put at least 4 or 5 minutes into it.
Yeah, and valid. I can validate the longevity of the friendship and probably a few stories offline that people would enjoy.
So I've known you for a long time, but I didn't know you when you were younger. What was the musical background of your childhood growing up, as a young boy? What was happening in the house musically?
Yeah, growing up as a young boy, I had my dad who was a country music Elvis lover and my mom who was Motown. So mix the two, and it was Michael Jackson meets Elvis, Pointer Sisters, and everybody in between. But music was always playing. I mean, it just growing up in the Deep South, that's just part of the culture.
Were there records being spinned or spun or whatever the word is, or was it the radio, or what was going on? You know, what was the media?
Record player. Yeah, and it for those who don't remember record players, every so often there's a skip, you know, and a scratch, and you have to reset the needle. But 90% of it was record player, and they at one point in time we were fancy when they got a big record player with extra big speakers, like an RCA, I think is what it was. So yeah, record player.
Do you have an earliest like musical memory that you can think of? If you really try to dig back deep, is there anything that ties into your memories?
So my first concert was with my mom.
Okay.
And I mentioned, living up in North Florida. We call it L.A., Lower Alabama.
Right.
But we had just moved down to Fort Myers. And for the folks that remember having concerts out there at the Civic Center, the Pointer Sisters came. And I was, 9, 10, 11 years old when we first came down. I guess my dad didn't want to go. So I was my mom's date.
It wasn't Elvis or country music.
It was not Elvis or country music. So I was my mom's date. It was my first concert. So almost like flashback memories every so often, I hear a song like, oh, wow, I think I saw that show. And then I'd remember seeing the show, and then you'd go back. And so that was a pretty influential deal, especially nowadays with all the sampling. You hear their music everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere.
What was the first music you owned as a young individual?
This is going to go back to country. Probably the first one was Hank Williams. Quickly followed up there by Fat Boys.
So what? How old would you have been around then? What year would that have been?
That would have been 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that ballpark.
And were you down here yet?
We had just kind of moved down here. Before that, it was listening to what mom and dad and aunts and uncles had planned.
Did you ever make mixtapes?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For yourself, for your buddies, for your soon-to-be, hopefully, ex-girlfriends?
I never got into the girlfriend mode, but I always wanted to be the coolest kid of the bunch in the neighborhood, right? So I went from trying to make mixtapes from recording one boombox on the other boombox and then trying to record when something came on the radio and get the right timing split. So, yeah, I don't – they probably weren't very good, but at the time I thought they were super cool.
Did you ever have like the double set cassette thing where you could high-speed dub one to the other? Did you ever get that far into it?
I wasn't that far into it, no. The one thing I would do with those mixtapes, though, is I'd take the boombox and walk around the neighborhood and throw it on my shoulder like I was someone special.
Right. And you grew up where in Fort Myers?
On Vesper.
Okay,
right off McGregor. We were lucky enough to live in that neighborhood. It was awesome. And at the time, I think.
So you were strolling down McGregor Boulevard with your boombox to your ear.
Yeah, with a skateboard under my feet or my Mongoose bicycle. And there was no one around. It was awesome. I mean, there was kids all through the neighborhoods, you know. There was – the development wasn't like it is now. There weren't that many boats on the water, and so it was fantastic.
Anybody ever give you a mixtape in hopes of turning you on to music or them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mike Prosser. Mike, someone I grew up with for a long time in the neighborhood there, and he was all into mixtapes. That was his deal, right? So he would always slide mixtapes in me.
Okay, let's get to your first song.
Sure.
What are we going to hear?
Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys?
Yeah.
Which song?
Fight for Your Right.
Do you want to tell a story about it before? You want to listen to it and then tell us what it means?
Well, why don't we play the tune and then I can fill in the story because it's going to give a little bit – it'll make sense at that point.
All right. This is Fight for Your Right to Party by the Beastie Boys. It's Cole Peacock's first song on this episode of Three Song Stories. Kick it! So were you fighting for your right to party back at some point in your life? What's going on with that song?
Yeah, so this song came out 86, you know, 87, and I was fighting for my right that summer. It was – when that song came out, I was with my cousin Hayes, and I mentioned, you know, being from North Florida. We've got a family lake house on Compass Lake, Mike, and it's – spring-fed, beautiful. You can see the bottom of the lake, 20 feet deep. I mean, just gorgeous, right? This song came out. Like I said, we're 13, 14 years old, and going back to mixtapes, well, we had the tape of it in the boombox, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't have music in boats yet, and this was still early in that. So at any rate, we would do whatever chores we had to do with the grandparents and the moms and dads, and then we were gone. We were on the boat skiing the whole day. This song was on a loop. It played and played and played and played and played, you know. And so when that song came out,
and you would have been what, 14?
13, 14. I would have been turning 14 that August, that summer, right? So this is coming into play where, you know, it's the first time when that song's playing that you see a girl standing in her bathing suit on the dock that you take a second look, or, you know, that you start to think, huh. Maybe there's something else out there.
Yeah, I do want to fight. Feel, kind of start to feel grown up a
right,
little bit.
Right, like you're fighting for your right. You know, you're coming into your manhood. And so this song over and over and over. And it didn't matter if we were just riding in the boat, smack talking. It didn't matter if we were skiing. You know, in that whole summer stretch, we used that as kind of our motivator because on the 4th of July, we always did a ski show for the whole lake. So here we are doing our routine to this song, doing barrel rolls on kneeboards, doing double barefoot, you know, doing the slalom, the trick skis, the whole routine ready to go. And what it also did is it drove competition between me and my cousin too in every positive aspect. But that song brings me right back to that summer, just an awesome experience. You know, it's almost like one of those every movie scenes you see from summer camp.
The montage happened to this song. So what did your folks think of this song? This song's a little edgy for maybe a 13-year-old for folks from the South.
Yeah, I don't know how much they really listened to it. You know, it was playing all the time. And, you know, I will say this about at least my mom and my aunt. They're pretty cool. They're pretty open-minded to stuff. They liked music. They could appreciate it. We didn't blare it as loud as we did with the two of us with the grandparents around
right.
any of that stuff.
But is it is this song and Beastie Boys in general still on your playlist?
Nonstop.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beastie Boys are my number one.
You ever see them live?
Six times.
Nice.
Yeah. One of the best shows I saw with them, which was a crazy lineup, was Cypress Hill. Henry Rollins and Beastie Boys, man. Yeah. And you're talking about going from like a really chill setting to Henry Rollins rocking the house and then the Beastie Boys come out and do their deal. Yeah, I've seen them quite a few times.
Is it possible to say you have a favorite band?
They would be it.
They'd be it.
Oh, yeah,
there
for sure.
You go.
Without a doubt.
That's great. So there's two kinds of people that I've come across so far. There's the Beatles, the Beastie Boys, or there's – what are you, crazy? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's – that would – that's it. You know, and you look at what the Beastie Boys have done. I mean, Rolling Stone just gave them all their accolades as one of the best bands and albums. And but if you look at what their music has done, they've gone from punk rock to the first phase of, like, you know, what I would call kind of middle class rap, to then really honing their skills into having some serious lyrical talent. And they put all kind of samples inside of it. Then they go out and do an entire instrumental. I mean, they're talented.
What do you think they'd think being called middle class rap?
Well, that's kind of how they rolled out,
that's
right?
True,
you know,
true.
I mean, to Russell Simmons' credit, he said, okay, you can't quite fit into Run DMC.
Yeah.
Let's try you here. But then it just exploded. I mean, it became – and here I am, you know, sitting – here I am skiing on a lake behind a boat jamming Beastie Boys.
Yeah, and here you are 30 years later about them.
That's right. That's exactly right.
God, Cole, it's been 30 years.
30 years. And that's still probably the best summer of my entire life. It was just one of those points in time where my cousin's my exact same age, you know. You know, you don't get the chance very often just to spend almost every single day on a boat skiing and doing what you love and being really good. I mean, hell, we were barefoot and we were 10 years old.
Yeah.
So by this time, we were talented doing what we do. So, yeah, I mean, look, Beastie Boys, maybe that's why it stuck in my head so long, Mike. So you got you got fun water jumping out of trees into the waters, you know, any kind of rope swing that was out there, skiing, girl, sun, fun. I mean, it just kind of all worked out.
Yeah, we need a grown-up version of that. Okay, let's talk about songs that nearly made it to your list. I know this is a really hard process for everyone. Is there a close fourth or fifth that you can, you know, real quickly sort of tell the story of it? You know, or why it almost made.
So there's a couple. Probably one that really was Talib Kweli, and he is in the genre of he's in rap, but I would say it's a little more lyrical based. You know, if you start really listening to what he has to say, but he has a song called "Get By." So there was a transition period in my life where I went from being a retail executive to not being a retail executive. And for whatever purpose, this song just spoke to me. It's, you know,
and what's it called again?
Get By. And it just kind of – it rolls, right? It's the struggles of life. It's how you pick your feet up by your bootstraps and move on. It just fit. Now, when that song comes on – it kind of fits in every mode of my life, no matter where I'm at. So it's good. I mean, you know, I mentioned kind of that lyrical side. He's in there with Mos Def and some others. So, you know, they're putting poetry to music.
So let's move on to song number two.
Sure.
What is it?
So song number two is a Ray Charles redo by Kanye West and Jamie Foxx. This song kind of came out when that Ray Charles movie came out again, but it's Gold Digger.
I have to real quickly tell you that I wanted one of our producers and reporters here at the station to listen to the song that I'd picked for the end of this show because I get to pick my song. And
okay.
So I said, go look in the folder. It's in there. And she was in the office next to me. And when she opened up the folder, she laughed out loud. She said, Gold Digger. So I just love the diversity of songs that
yeah.
we get to put on
yeah.
the air through this show.
This is a fun song. And it's a shared experience with Rachel, my bride, and I that we had. So, yeah.
Well, beautiful. Let's hear Gold Digger by Kanye West featuring Jamie Foxx riffing on Ray Charles. It's my guest today, Cole Peacock, second song choice here on Three Song Stories.
Cutie the bomb, met her at a beauty salon with a baby Louis Vuitton under her underarm. She said, I could tell you rock, I could tell by your charm. Fars, girls, you got a flock, I could tell by your charm and your arm. But I'm looking for the one, have you seen her? My psychic told me she have a like Serena, Trina, Gina for Lopez. Four kids and I gotta take all they bad to show this. Okay, get your kids, but then they got their friends. I pulled up in the Benz, they all got a pin. We all went to den, and then I had to pay. If you f***ing with this girl, then you better be paid. You know why? Take too much to touch her. From what I heard, she got a baby by Buster. My best friend said she used to f*** with Usher. I don't care what none of y'all say, I still love her. Get down, girl, go ahead. Let me hear that back.
That was Gold Digger by Kanye West featuring Jamie Foxx. So what pops into your head when you hear that song?
My son Jackson pops into my head. So, yeah. And there was a point in time, Rachel and I, you know, kind of our routine to still to this day, is we get up, have a cup of coffee, we'll read the paper, right? Well, in our house where everything sits, there's the TV and, you know, there's stereo and music and all that stuff. And I mentioned earlier, this is about the time that Ray Charles movie had come out,
yeah.
right? So, this song comes on, and Jackson, at the time,
that would be pretty young. That'd be wild.
Yeah, he was probably two years old. He was born three, so this – I think this came out like 5 or 6, so just, you know, two and a half. And Jackson's a big boy when he came out, right? I mean, he has he's got all the little fat rolls on his arm
yeah,
and his
yeah,
legs.
A little
Michelin man. So he's sitting there in the middle of the floor. You know, we're drinking coffee, and he's got his diaper on, and this song comes on, and – all of a sudden, man, he just starts like bottom dropping, and he's dancing. He's getting the rhythm, and this is the first time I'd ever really seen him like dance.
So not like you taught him this.
Oh, yeah, he felt it. Hands flying up in the air, head bobbing. I mean, it looked like he was on the damn video. And I spit my coffee out, started laughing and watch it, and then we'd go through and kind of tested it, right? Was that like a one-off?
Yeah, yeah.
Every time this song
it's
would
like
come
a trigger.
On, oh, man. I could be driving, he'd be in the back seat, in the baby seat. I turn the song on, and I see his head bopping. His hands will raise up in the air. You know, here I am thinking he's at a concert watching him dance. And every single time, it was just awesome. And, you know, Rachel and I, you mentioned earlier, have three kids. So we have a his, hers, and ours. And you experience something with all your kids, and you raise them. And Rachel may have had that young moment with Hannah, and I may have had a young moment with Sterling before Rachel and I got together. So this was kind of a shared moment.
Yeah.
We're watching, like – well, that's the first time you can't dance.
Well, that's us.
That's us, right? You know, but to set that picture of, you know, just a baby, you know, blonde curly hair all over the joint, Michelin baby in a diaper dancing to Kanye West was just awesome.
Did that continue? Was there a point at which that stopped happening? What happens if you play it to him today? Does he listen to it himself?
He's 13 now. He's too cool for it, you know.
He's going to love hearing this.
Oh, he's going to love to hear this, right. You know, he likes the song. It's all good still, but I don't see him out there, you know, shaking a leg or anything when it comes on.
You know, by the time he gets to college, though, he might be dangerous.
He might be. He might be. He very well might be, but it really didn't. I mean, you know, if they played this song and it came over the intercom at Publix, he was going to dance. That's just how he just felt it. I don't think he's, you know, at that age, he didn't feel any other song like this one. So, and it's right about that first time where the beat comes in. You kind of hear that Ray Charles loop. I mean, it, boom, trigger. It'd be funny to your point, go test him every so often, just kind of play that loop, see what happens.
Well, you know what's great about this show is, you know, I've known you for ages, and I've known, you know, Rachel since she was in third grade or
something.
And I still learn something new.
Yeah,
puts new context on you. So where are you at musically today? I mean, are you just in your playlist of all your past favorites? Do you have something new that's come along?
Oh, I'm always looking for something new, you know. I mean, it's I went through a phase for a while that I fell in love with the Roots. They're awesome. Mm-hmm. They're just talented across the board. You know, Alabama Shakes. You and I were talking earlier. One of the that kind of go back always listen to is Big Head Todd and the Monsters. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just beautiful music. I always want to continue to listen to music. I mean, it's you've been to my house enough. There's music playing all the time. I may go through a reggae phase. I may go through a, you know, an all guitar phase. I mean, it's I like to build that library of music all the time.
Do you have a go-to like Pandora channel? Do you use Pandora? I know you said you use Spotify.
Pandora, more than Spotify these days. do I have a go-to channel? Right now, I'm kind of feeling reggae, so mm-hmm. it's a Bob Marley channel. Before that, you know, I tell you, one of the great channels on there was Lenny Kravitz.
Oh yeah,
because it runs everything from a 311 to an Alabama Shakes to
Tracy Chapman channel actually really brings out some interesting stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I try to find those channels that doesn't just play the same 10 songs, right? That really opens up Pandora's box. Pandora.
Oh,
yeah. There you go.
They should put that in their marketing.
They should put that in their marketing.
Is there a band you've discovered recently that you don't think our listeners would know? Is there something new that's hit your radar?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily recent for me, but J.J. Gray and Mofro. Man, you're talking about some funky music. For the folks who have not listened to J.J. Gray and Mofro, go check it out. I've been jamming to him for the past 5 years or so, 6 years. He's a Florida boy. They're right out of there. He's from Lockloosa. The rest of the band's from—
Where's that?
Lockloosa's Alachua County.
Okay.
And then he's from the rest of the group's from Jacksonville, and there's a couple out of New Orleans. So it's got that southern funk, you know, really kind of southern rock and roll added in with some horns. It's funky, funky music. Most of his songs are about Florida. I think it's a relevant time because he's talking about clean water and he's talking about slowing down some of the developments. You know, he's got a one line in there that we don't need any more Mickey Mouse universes. And, you know, Florida boys, he's an old cracker. He's a Florida cracker. Hmm. So he sees things a little differently. He still likes to see the swamp lands and still likes to see the backyards.
Have you seen him live?
I have. Fantastic.
Where?
Last time I saw him was Buckingham Blues Bar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Tommy out there at Buckingham Blues Bar, man, he brings JJ in every year. They're friends. Tommy even gets out there and plays with the band. But I can tell you, when they announce he's coming, it's all gone.
Well, next time he's coming, let me know. I'll come with y'all.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Another one that's kind of true to me all the time I listen to a lot of is G-Love.
Okay.
Yeah, G-Love and Special Sauce. They're good.
All right, it's time to move on to your third and final song. What do you got for us?
So this one's a little different to two before. This is the Zach Brown Band, Chicken Fry.
Chicken Fry. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it beforehand? You want to listen to it, talk about it after?
No, let's play it because the story I'll tell about it kind of fits into the lyrics of the song.
All right. This is Chicken Fry by the Zach Brown Band. You're listening to Three Song Stories.
You know, well, I'm a chicken fry. Cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio. I like to see the sunrise, see the love in my woman's eyes, feel the touch of my precious child. And no mother's love.
So what's the story or stories behind that one? I kind of already know, but bring us down that road.
Yeah, so that one to me is a little tearjerker. it's got a couple meanings. First and foremost, it really is a Southern man's anthem. You know, my whole life growing up, Zach Brown must have lived the same life. Because come Friday night, especially growing up on a farm in North Florida and lower Alabama, fried chicken was on a black iron skillet, beers were in a cooler, everybody had on their jeans, you know, and you were sitting at the farm or sitting out at the lake. that's how you bond it with your family. So it really speaks to me on that level. I probably had more fun and more memories sitting around cast iron skillets with chicken frying and beers being drank, maybe some moonshine in between there somewhere with my folks, and watching my grandparents and my parents interact and watching my cousins interact with each other. And yeah, just Southern living.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that side of it, you know, the second component is just the, you know, some of the phrases inside that song where he talks about it doesn't matter the price tags, doesn't matter, yeah. You know, what you're doing, where you're at, what kind of car you drive. There's no, you know, you can't put a price tag on peace of mind. You know, I was kind of raised that way. You've known me a long time. I'm pretty much the same cat when you met me.
Yeah,
I am
that
today.
That rings real true. Trust me.
You know, so those things speak to me in my soul and my heart. I try to instill all that in my family. The tearjerker side, you know, it's been 2 years now that my mom has passed away. She passed away at 64, way too young, and it was hard, and hard for anybody to go through that. Shortly before that, my mom and dad celebrated their 40th anniversary. So again, you know, Rachel and I put together a 40th anniversary party. And this was a song that is the theme for the party. We did a video, so it showcased 40 years of my mom and dad, right, with my brothers Jeremy and Dustin, with the grandkids, with their grandkids, with our kids, with graduation from high schools and college, with trips they went on. So when you put together, you know, a slideshow to this song in 40 years of your parents' life, it's pretty awesome to see that, right?
Yeah. It's now, also very impactful.
Very impactful.
To your emotions and memories.
It is. And right about the time that we threw this party, we found out my mom was sick. So this was about right around 4 years before, maybe five. We kind of found out she had this blood disorder. Yeah, so that added another whole element to what we were doing, right?
So you were aware of that during the anniversary party?
Yeah, we were really aware.
In
the early stages, really what was going on, you know, really what the family needed to be prepared for. So kind of had that in the back of your head, but to be married 40 years, that's a treat,
yeah.
Right? So we went and put this party together. We invited all my mom's friends, all my dad's friends, all the cousins and the aunts and the uncles and the grandparents, and we had it out there at Kim Avery's barn in Alva. And, man, let me tell you, we had a throwdown party, right? You're talking about chicken fried and all this other stuff. Well, how are you going to do a Southern party? You're going to open up the barn doors and throw a damn party, right?
Yeah.
So we did. So we had live music. You know, we showed this video. We had everybody there. It was a get-down party that everybody had a blast at. When you see your cousins dancing with my mom, or, you know, you're dancing with your grandparents, or you're dancing with your wife or your friends and whatever else, it was cool. It really was. Yeah, so that song kind of has three important parts in my life. But I listened to it just with you and almost got teared up. It really signifies our family, the what we went through, you know, from childhood all the way through. And if anything, it sticks with me about my mom probably more than any song does.
You mentioned going to your first concert with your mom. Can you give us another Jan story real quick, like a favorite? You got one?
Yeah. Jan story. So I was, this was summer, and every mom loves their kids, right? So I don't want to take away from that, but I'd gone away to school, and it was the first time I'd really been away, and I was going to school in Tennessee. So it wasn't like I could just come home. Right. I got sick. Well, probably not as sick as I let on to be, but mm-hmm. I'm sick enough where, you know, maybe I need an excuse for one of my classes.
Well,
yeah. So I call my mom, and next thing I know, she's going to pick me up at the airport. I said, what are you talking about? So she flies into Nashville to take care of me, does all that. And then the other thing, you talk about mom stories, this is one we always joke about. So there was a spell there where we would go all summer long on some sort of trips, right? And having Jackson and Hannah and Sterling and all the kids and whatever else. We did this trip to Disney where we did Disney and SeaWorld. Well, my mom had just had knee surgery, so she was in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. Best experience ever, man. Go to Disney or SeaWorld in a wheelchair. We didn't have to wait for a single ride, didn't do anything. So kind of running joke when
time to rent a wheelchair.
Time to rent a wheelchair. That's right. Mom, you got a hurt knee again? You got an elbow? Something wrong? What's going on? But more than that, just, you know, my kids call her Janji. That was her instead of grandmom. She's Janji. And biggest heart of anyone I ever met. You know, it's you've seen her.
Oh, yeah.
Every time she's around, what can she do for you? Are you okay? What's going on? She never forgets a name, never forgets a story. And she's just she was a pure Southern woman through and through.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about her on this show today. One more question before we sign off. You talked about your first concert with her. Do you have a concert memory that is like the pinnacle of your live music experiences thus far in life?
Yeah, probably the first Lollapalooza.
Okay.
Yeah, first Lollapalooza that I saw was the first one. It had, you know, Ice-T, it had L7, Jane's Addiction. I think Butthole Surfers were at that one. I think the Beastie Boys came on the second one. So for me, that was wow.
Yeah,
right?
That's something different.
It's totally different. And then I went to, I think, the next two Lollapaloozas, you know. But they were kind of one of, for me, there was nothing of that caliber that matched up to maybe a Woodstock, right? Because you had so many bands. Now you've got Coachella and you've got other stuff going on. But at that time period, you didn't. This was it. Lollapalooza was it. And you had that wave of music where they were trying to blend hip-hop and hardcore rap and punk music and, you know, metal, and rock and roll was kind of fading out. There were, you know, Def Leppard of the world had a great run, but they were phasing out, and you were seeing Metallica take over and follow up that with Jane's Addiction. I mean, they're one of the best bands. You can just – Perry Farrell's pretty talented. That second Lollapalooza probably was another changing, because I believe that's – you had the Chili Peppers and you had –
What year would that have been? Roughly,
I think the first one I did was 92, maybe, so some 93, 4, somewhere in that ballpark. But I mean, you put Snoop Dogg on the same stage with the Chili Peppers, and you know, I mean, just the blend of music that took place.
It was mind blowing.
It was awesome. Yeah. It really was.
You know, I don't know if you know this, but we went to Lollapalooza in 2008 with Gwen when she was 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Is that Gwen's first? Kind of a judgment call, you know?
So her experience of her first concert is a little different than my experience.
Well, I don't think she remembers it. But the story I want to tell real quick is that Sunday, the final day of the run, fell on Father's Day.
Okay.
And so I'm walking around pulling her in a red wagon behind me, and I'm having dudes stop me one after the other to take a picture so they can prove to their wife that it's okay to take a kid.
On Father's Day.
On Father's Day.
That's awesome.
That's a true story.
That's awesome.
Okay. Well, any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
Man, I really enjoyed it. That's a final thought. It's really hard to pick 3 songs. You know, it did. It was a struggle. I mean, I've got so many songs and so many stories to tell that I sit with them. But it's awesome. I mean, it really made me go back and think about, you know, go through my music library and really kind of figure out what really stood out the most. So thanks for the challenge, man. I'm glad I was able to pull it off.
Oh, well, thanks for doing it with me. It's been a real treat. A trip down memory lane for all of us.
It's cool. It was really cool.
We make 3 song stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers. The show is produced, directed, and co-created by Richard Chin Kui. Tara Callaghan and Anna Bejarano are our online content producers. Chris Duffus is our executive producer. Our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. Before we play our parting tune this week, I want to put a challenge out to listeners. What's your best song story? If you've got one you want to tell, just record it to your phone and email it to mysongstory@wgcu.org. We're going to be picking our favorites and using them as parting tunes sometime sooner than later. And a quick editorial note. I was so caught up in the moment with Cole, my brain glitched. The quite likely somewhat, if not entirely inappropriate for a toddler, multi-day, multi-act music festival I attended with her in 2008 was Bonnaroo, not Lollapalooza. Just want to try to stick to the truth in this storyteller podcast whenever possible. But this week, my parting tune is by a guy named Jason Isbell. I discovered him via an interview on NPR a few years ago when he released his album called Something More Than Free, which immediately took over my listening habits for a while. When I saw he was coming to Barbara B. Mann Performing Arts Hall, I jumped on tickets, got two in the third row for me and my at-the-time 10-year-old daughter, Gwen. It was her first real concert, and she was pretty much the only kid in the building. Man, he is a force of nature, and his fiddle-playing wife happened to be with him on tour at the moment, so we were treated to an amazing show that I'm sure will be stuck in both of our minds forever. This is Children of Children by Jason Isbell from his 2015 album Something More Than Free. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening. Next time on Three Song Stories.
I remember seeing this guy on the album cover, spotlight on stage, his beautiful mane of hair, and he had this guitar that was the coolest looking guitar I've ever seen. And I just thought to myself, I want to be that person one day.